Welcome to ClotCast, the North American Thrombosis Forum's podcast series. This podcast encourages open and ongoing dialogue between healthcare providers and patients by teaching proven communication techniques and empowering patients to be active participants in their care. Welcome to the North American Thrombosis Forum's podcast on understanding the link between heart attack, stroke, and blood clots, and how healthy habits can help prevent these events. I'm Dr. Neil Skolnick, Professor of Family and Community Medicine at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University. And joining me today is Dr. Esther Kim, who is an Associate Professor of Medicine at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Welcome, Dr. Kim.
Thank you, Dr. Skolnick.
And Ms. Melissa Shea, who has had experience and challenges with heart attacks, stroke, and pulmonary embolus. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you.
Our discussion today is going to be oriented both to patients and clinicians because we know when we work as partners in the care of our patients and ourselves, we have the best outcomes. And let's start off by level setting with regard to the information that we have. Dr. Kim, can you explain the difference between an artery and a vein?
Yes, of course, Dr. Skolnick. I think it is important for us to understand the anatomy so that we can understand the pathology. An artery is a blood vessel that leaves the heart, where the blood leaves the heart and supplies oxygen to all the vital organs. And so when we talk about heart attack and stroke, these are disease processes that affect the arterial circulation. Veins are blood vessels that carry blood flow back to the heart. And so when we talk about things like DVT or deep venous thrombosis or PE, pulmonary embolism, these are disease processes that affect the veins. In patients who have normal hearts, meaning that there is no connection between the left and the right side of the hearts, these circulations are closed, meaning that a blood clot that is on the vein side of the heart should not be able to cause a heart attack or a stroke, and vice versa. There are some patients who have an abnormal connection between the two sides of the heart, which helps pump the blood throughout the body. And these are patients who can experience blood clots in both the veins and the arteries at the same time. And so remember that the arteries carry blood away from the heart and the veins carry blood back into the heart.
So that's really helpful, fundamental information. And then when we think about both from a patient and a clinician point of view, how to best prevent things like heart attacks, stroke, deep venous thrombosis, pulmonary embolus, are there risk factors that some might be common to both, some might be particular to one or the other that we should pay attention to?
Yes, I think the science has really evolved in the past several decades to help us understand that even though stroke and heart attack are arterial diseases and DVT and PE are venous events, there are some commonalities. So when we think about heart attacks and strokes that occur, we think about risk factors, and there are risk factors that we can't change, such as our genetics, our family history. But there are risk factors that we can change, such as high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes. And it turns out that inflammation and thrombosis, which is the development of blood clots, are also important players in the development of heart attack and stroke. When we think about risk factors for DVT, there are several that may be different from arterial diseases. Namely, patients who are what we call hypercoagulable, meaning that they have a tendency to form blood clots. These generally tend to cause more DVT and PE, though some can also cause heart attack and stroke. Some of the risk factors would be stasis, meaning that the blood flow is slow because of things like heart failure or being in the hospital or having had a hip surgery and you're laid up in the hospital. There are also family history factors. There are genetics that play into the development of blood clots as well, where you can have mutations in genes that code some of the blood clot factors. And then we're also discovering that inflammation is also an important factor in the development of blood clots on the venous system. And so in terms of thinking about what are the common things that connect all of these arterial events together, we think about inactivity, because we know that inactivity can lead to a host of bad things, including blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, but also it can lead to stasis and increase your risk for developing a blood clot, such as when a person's in the hospital, but also dietary factors. If we eat a poor diet, that can increase inflammation in our bodies as well. So many, many different risk factors, but certainly some that are in common.
I love the way you made the point that there are things we can do, and you differentiated between the things we can't change, our genetics. It is what it is. But we are not the victims of our genes. We can then make real changes with regard to exercise, decreasing sedentary behaviors. You talked about good nutrition, weight management, not smoking, all sorts of things that we can do to make a difference in our lives.
You're listening to ClotCast, the North American Thrombosis Forum's podcast series. For more information on thrombosis and related conditions, please visit thrombosis.org. Now let's get back to the conversation.
Let's go on now and talk to Melissa. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and experience so we can learn from a patient point of view about these diseases and your experience with them?
My experience started in 2008, right after I had a healthy pregnancy, a healthy baby. I had an extremely bad headache. And luckily, we live 10 minutes from Mass General Hospital in downtown Boston. So I said, you know what, let me go to the emergency room. And I was having a stroke. I had a left vertebral artery dissection, which caused a bleed, which caused a stroke. And my blood pressure had skyrocketed to 212 over 86. So before that, I had had no prior issues with any blood pressure issues, any hematology issues, anything. So that was definitely a scary event. And then a few years went by, I got pregnant again. And with the assistance of IVF, I had to go through the IVF treatment. And right after I had my second child, who thank God was healthy, and that was an uneventful pregnancy as well, I suffered two SCADs, which is spontaneous coronary artery dissection, which are heart attacks. Luckily, when I was at the hospital, they knew what was happening and they knew to get me to Mass General right away. Again, I was very lucky and had great doctors, a great team who knew what was happening and knew the right treatment and was able to save my life, basically. A few years after that, that was in 2015. And in 2017, while at work, I had a hard time catching my breath, which normally, if I had not had those past issues, I never would have questioned it. But I did call the nurse where my primary care is. And they said, you know what, with your history, why don't you just go get it checked out? So I drove myself to Mass General and I was having multiple pulmonary embolisms in my lungs. So that's another thing that obviously wasn't expected, wasn't really talked about with any of my doctors. It was sort of an out of the blue thing. And luckily they were able to get that under control. So I've had experience with stroke, heart attack, and blood clots. As far as genetics, I've been tested for many genetic issues. Nothing has really been found. So I do have a problem with my kidneys, which they do think maybe that is a cause of all my ailments. But right now, I just have a big team at Mass General who's wonderful, and they're all on board and, you know, are able to talk to each other and get me the right form of treatment.
You're listening to ClotCast, the North American Thrombosis Forum's podcast on understanding the link between heart attacks, stroke, and blood clots, and how healthy habits can help prevent these events.
Melissa, clearly you've had a lot of experience with vascular disease, more experience than most people have. And you're also clearly very thoughtful and reflective on your experience. Can you share with us, when you think about the things that you went through, what worked well for you with regard to your medical teams?
You definitely have to be your own advocate. Obviously, when this all started, I was a 30-year-old healthy woman. You know, they were dumbfounded really on what was happening and why I was going through all this. And as the years went by, my primary care, who's wonderful, collected a team of, I have a nephrologist for my kidneys, a hematologist, a neurologist. So everyone is able to be on the same team. And that was very helpful for me. Obviously, they're all on the same page. They're all able to give me a treatment plan that I could easily follow, and I could easily get a hold of my doctors. And my primary care was my quarterback, and she was wonderful to put together a team of the right people.
So it sounds like, as you're describing, you've mentioned team a few times, giving you information that was easy to understand, that communication is a critical part of good care. Is that right?
Absolutely. Right after I had the stroke, I was supposed to see a neurologist very soon after I had left the hospital. And unfortunately, with Mass General Hospital, they're extremely busy. So it ended up being like a 2-month wait to see a neurologist when I first started. But that initial meeting did not go as planned. I had an in-home nurse. I had not been able to really carry my newborn baby in the baby carrier, just so many things that I was not able to do because I had just had a stroke. And then going to that first doctor's appointment where I think all my questions are going to be answered and, you know, my whole life has changed. And it wasn't really the case. Not that it wasn't important to the doctor, but, you know, it was a life-changing event for me and just another day for the doctor.
What a critical thing. And I just want to really make sure we don't lose that thought, because remember, people listening are both patients and clinicians. And what can be of critical importance to a patient for our lives as doctors, it's important to remember it's not just another day. This is a critical moment in someone's healthcare, and the importance, as you said, of communication, clear communication, of which includes, of course, listening, right? It's been said Yes. We have been given 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. And the last question I want to ask you about is that issue of listening and being heard as a patient. This must have been an incredibly difficult time where it changes your sense of self, your sense of who you are. Was it important to have your doctors appreciate that?
Absolutely. I had an extremely hard time after the heart attack emotionally. I found the NATF and I started going to their in-person support group, and that was life-changing for me. I was able to tell my story and share stories with other patients who have been through the same thing, and a world-renowned doctor in the pulmonary embolism field who, you know, to be at a table with him and be able to ask him anything you have issues with and questions about. So that definitely helped. And the same thing with SCAD. We sort of started a support group with my cardiologist, and we did it one night and didn't know that anybody would come, and 50 people showed up, and 50 people were in the same boat as I was. They were scared. They were nervous. They had questions. It's not every day you can just pick up your phone and call your doctor or call a specialist and are able to sit there and pick their brain. And those support groups were extremely helpful for me. And I know they were for a lot of other people too.
That's so helpful to hear. And it's something we don't always think about, but is very important to think about.
You're listening to ClotCast. Visit us at www.thrombosis.org for more information on blood clots and related conditions. To leave feedback or suggestions for future topics, please call our podcast hotline at 617-340-9842.
Let me come back now to Dr. Kim. And Dr. Kim, any thoughts that you have that come to mind as you're listening to Melissa's story?
Melissa, thank you so much for sharing your story. It takes a lot of bravery to go through what you've gone through and then turn that around to teach others and also support others. That really reflects on the type of person that you are. So thank you for that. So many thoughts after her comments, but I know we have limited time. One, just thinking medically, you know, all the risk factors that we talked about in terms of atherosclerosis and DVT-PE earlier in the podcast, that applies to 98% of the U.S. population who are affected by these disorders. So I think if we can get risk factors under control, see your doctor regularly, particularly as you hit middle age and older, stop smoking, control the weight, get up and exercise. These are all things that are common sense, and I think that most of us understand. But as doctors, when we see people like Melissa who don't fit the mold, she was young, She had a heart attack. She had a stroke. She had a PE. We need to start thinking outside of the box. And so if you are a person who has experienced these events, it just doesn't make sense. You don't have the risk factors. You're a young person. You don't have the family history. You need to be an advocate, as Melissa said, and seek out the appropriate care. And then I guess my final thought would be, you know, if something doesn't make sense, find someone who will also be your partner who is a physician. So for Melissa, that was her primary care physician who was her quarterback. And certainly Melissa's is a case where she needed more than one doctor. And this is often the case for patients who are complex and don't fit the mold. And someone who can kind of help be the medical guide through the complex journey is really important. So kudos to you, Melissa, for finding an excellent team, but also making a team for yourself to help support you emotionally and psychosocially as you walk through this.
That is fantastic. Dr. Kim, Melissa, thank you both for joining us today. And Melissa, for sharing your story so bravely so that we can all learn from it. Dr. Kim, as you said, I can't summarize it better than you can. Paying attention to risk factors, basics, right? Hypertension, cholesterol, diabetes, not smoking. And as a way of avoiding some of those things, exercising regularly, eating well, meaning attentive to good nutrition, not sitting too long. In fact, I think it's recommended only to sit for about the length of this podcast, then to do 3 minutes of standing.
This is your host, Dr. Neil Skolnick. Thank you for joining our conversation today on ClotCast, the North American Thrombosis Forum's podcast series. We want to thank Janssen Pharmaceuticals and AstraZeneca for their generous grant support of this podcast, and we invite you to continue the conversation by checking out the resources and events at thrombosis.org. Thanks again, and we look forward to seeing you next time.